From the sports desk of the Ames Tribune, Ames, Iowa, the home of the Cyclones. This is the Cyclone Slant. With sports editor Travis Hines. Now, the Cyclone Slant.
Hello and welcome to the Cyclone Slant podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. I am Ames Tribune sports editor Travis Hines, joined by Dylan Muntz on a Tuesday afternoon. Iowa State coming off a big win at home against TCU with now two road games facing them, starting this weekend at West Virginia and the following at Texas Tech. Dylan, what's going on, my man?
Oh, not much. I'm anxious to get to Morgantown, though.
Dylan had a long night. He was up at the Twins' continued postseason debacle against the Yankees. And are back here on Tuesday. Good job out of you to get back on time for work.
Yeah, all my travel went well. The game was the game. The weather was good, though, at least.
I used to be a diehard Twins fan, and over the last decade, I've dropped off for a variety of reasons. But holy hell, those games are way too long.
Yeah, the postseason, I think, just kind of goes into that itself. But then the Yankees style of play, there's more pitching changes.
It's really boring.
Yeah, I walked out of Target Field and I was like, holy crap, it's midnight.
I've never been a baseball is boring guy, even though I've secretly felt it for a long time, but geez, is it boring.
Not to go on some sort of rant here, even though I guess that's what podcasts are for, but the game's they have to be sped up in some way.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a good fix, but it's like I'm watching the game last night, and I watched the game one and game three. Game two we didn't get to see because we were at Jack Troy Stadium on Saturday. But the whole time I kept finding myself looking at my watch going like, they're only in the third inning? They're only in the sixth inning? Hard pass. I don't have 4+ hours to devote to baseball.
Well, if both teams are contributing to it, it makes a difference. The Twins just obviously couldn't get anything going offensively. The Yankees were able to knock a couple home runs over. All around kind of a tough game to stomach.
I was a sophomore in high school the last time they won a postseason game.
Wow. Let's do the math.
Yeah. Long time. All right. That's enough Twins talk. Iowa State's got a big road trip coming up at West Virginia, but we're going to take a little bit different format for the podcast this week because it's our podcast and we feel like it and are kind of lazy and didn't really want to come up with a outline.
Well, so, you didn't have to say the last part. You
could
have
just said it. Yeah, but it's true. We're, transparency in podcasting here.
Sure, true.
So we're going to let you guys dictate the outline of our podcast today with some questions that you shot our way on Twitter. The first comes from Kenny Clone. Wanting to know or wanting to be told, please tell me they aren't messing with the offensive line this week. Ellipses with Newell back. Colin Newell was in uniform on Saturday against TCU, did not get in the game, and Campbell was pretty adamant, clear, and direct about the strides he thought the offensive line took on Saturday, especially versus the previous week at Baylor. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I would be pretty surprised to see Newell just jump right back into the starting lineup. How about you?
Yeah, I don't think it happens. I think unless something were to happen with this current group or they were to really go south, I don't think you mess with something that you've had for four consecutive games now, because I think Trevor Downing has come in and played well. Colin Olsen, I think, has done better than I would have thought at center, making that kind of weird switch. And then Bryce Meeker probably, I know he's gotten a lot of flack this year and last year as well, but I think he probably had one of his better games on Saturday, just kind of going back and rewatching some things. And Matt Campbell echoed that as well. But I don't think this is even as solid as Newell was last year and as important a position as he played. I don't think he'd go and kind of rock the foundation right now because I think he can still be used, but I don't know if it's something that is worth upsetting the balance at this point.
Yeah, I think when it comes to injury news, you have to be careful because Campbell's not always the most forthcoming about injuries, as we saw with Jaquan Bailey after the game on Saturday, that it was a lower leg injury that wasn't a knee and that required surgery and was bone-related.
Bone-related.
But let's assume that Newell, and I think it's probably a pretty good indication that he was in uniform last week, let's assume that he is available to play. I think he will play.
I do too.
If he's available, I think he'll play. I think they'll ease him back in for all the reasons we outlined there. And then if he's back up to speed, maybe at Texas Tech, maybe the following week, what's at home against Oklahoma State, then maybe you make a move. Because like that's where you kind of, in my opinion, like assuming the next 2 weeks go the way they should, or 3 weeks maybe, like you got to be able to hit hyperdrive going into November. Like you have to be dialed in at 10 or 11 on like how well you're playing if you really want to win those November games against Oklahoma, against Texas, at Kansas State, where you're, you know, punching your ticket to Arlington. So like that's what I think, assuming things go right through this next three week stretch, like you've got to be calibrating everything to where you're hitting on all cylinders, you know, starting that first week in November.
You have to have had your identity formed by then. You can't still be figuring out who you are later on in the year. And if they were to make a switch, I don't even know what they would do at this point. I don't know if it's as simple as, oh, he's just going to go back and start at center, because I think Colin Olsen has done well. I think they've obviously loved Trevor Downing ever since they started recruiting him, and certainly when he signed and he was talked about as a true freshman that could play at times, and he did for however many snaps last year. And that kind of goes into then, do you make a lot of changes and do you take Bryce Meeker out of the lineup and move Josh Kniffel out to right tackle and slot Newell in at guard? Do you move Julinka Jones? I don't think so, because I think he's played well enough and been had enough continuity at that position where you I don't think you make that kind of move at this point in the year when you are trying to have things figured out so you can make some sort of run. So there's all the stuff about Newell himself and coming back from injuries, but just logistically then, and the decisions you'd have to make in pulling somebody out, I don't know what you'd do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I will say that when asked for an unsung hero today, Campbell did mention Josh Kniffel. And when you're talking about the guard that maybe moves outside, maybe that's a hint, but that's connecting some dots three or four steps out.
If someone told me that they were going to make the move, the first thing I would guess would be Kniffel would go to right tackle and Bryce Meeker would be coming off the bench. But again, it's something that they'll kind of have to weigh and figure out as Newell gets healthier, and to see if this offensive line can kind of repeat what it did against TCU going forward.
Exploded Melon wants to know what the top five ding-dong moments in your career are.
You could probably tell me better than I can tell myself. There's been quite a few of them.
So Campbell said today that he was really a ding-dong, which maybe we need to dissect the term ding-dong here. When he asked Zach Peterson to take a gray shirt during the recruitment, Peterson obviously has established himself as one of Iowa State's most dynamic defenders, which will be especially important now with Jaquan Bailey's injury, like we mentioned earlier. But before we, you know, both divulge our top five ding, are they top five or it would probably be bottom five, right?
It bottom.
It's a scale of moments, and ding dong is probably pretty low on the scale of, you know, productive and successful moments in your career.
To be a bigger ding dong, you have to have made bigger mistakes. So it'd be
sure.
It'd be ones you wouldn't want to divulge. So it'd be at the bottom.
Tell me how good Zach Peterson's been and how important he's been for this defense and how important he will continue to be.
Yeah, Matt Campbell's repeatedly called him their most consistent defensive lineman, not even defensive end. And I think a lot of that is due to just kind of the way he goes about the position. He's a little bit different than all the other guys because of the I think his intent is a little bit different. Matt, you know, this, I guess you could call him like a meathead, but it's not a disrespectful term.
Okay. Tell me how that's not a disrespectful term.
Because I'm not even saying he's not intelligent. I think,
I mean, at least
really
you didn't call him a ding dong. You just called him a meathead.
No, but I think that's what you want from defensive linemen. You want them to be really physical and go after the quarterback, and he's done that really well. And I want to go and say that I think he is intelligent in talking to him today. I mean,
let's go with physically relentless on the football field, maybe instead of meathead.
Sure, that's fine.
Let's do that one.
Okay. Yeah,
but you get paid for words here. Let's be precise with him.
Yeah, that worked. But no, I think he's been really effective, and he was all over the field on Saturday too. He forced the turnover on special teams. He was a really good high school wrestler. So I think, you know, and Matt Campbell kind of brought up that story about initially when they were recruiting him wanting to gray shirt him. And just he thought he was maybe a little bit skinny at the time and not necessarily would be ready to jump in and play. But then Matt Campbell went up and saw him at a wrestling tournament in Waterloo and said, you know, I think he had wrestled two matches that day, pinned one guy in 11 seconds, the next one in 24 seconds. And you made the decision then, like, you know, we can't go and red gray shirt this kid. He can come in and play right now. So they went and met with him, kind of explained through the decision, and ultimately were able to get him. But he's really transformed himself over the last year or so too. I think he put the most weight of anybody on the team on his frame over the last year. So I think, you know, it's been timely for sure. And also, you know, really interesting, an in-state kid coming in and doing that. And, you know, they like what he's given them so far. And he is going to be a big piece moving forward, because the Bailey timeline is still, there's so much up in the air.
So without giving it too much thought, while you were talking, I was definitely listening and not trying to think of ding dong moments, but I did come up with one. Do you have any?
I haven't come up with any because okay. I was.
Mine's a good one and a long story. So, my first year on the beat, so it would have been the 2012-13 basketball season. I got hung up in the O'Hare Airport, which has never happened to anyone before, in January, February, or whenever the hell it was, with like multiple delays trying to get to the Oklahoma State game. And so this would be winter 2013. So I'm already running late. Finally land in Oklahoma City hours and hours later than I was supposed to. And if you're familiar with Oklahoma geography, Oklahoma City is about an hour and a half away from Stillwater. So I landed, I want to say maybe an hour before the game starts. So I know I'm going to be late. I race down the escalator to the car rental place where I have made a reservation, only to for them to tell me they have no reservation. I pull it up on my email. I'm showing them my phone, like, I have the reservation right here, here's the number, only to realize I had made the reservation in Stillwater, where I was going, but not where I flew into. So that was definitely a top ding dong moment for me. And they were all out of cars, so I had to go to like six other different car rental places in the Oklahoma City airport before I finally found one that had an available vehicle. Otherwise, I would have just missed the game and been stranded at the Oklahoma City airport all night.
That's pretty brutal. That's not a big car rental facility at that airport either.
No. So I walked into Gallagher Ibra Arena with like 5 seconds left in the first half. And if you've been there, you have to kind of like walk behind the bleachers. And all of a sudden, I hear the buzzer go off and then the place explode and I can't see what happens. It was Marcus Smart hitting a half court shot right before the buzzer that I missed. And I believe Iowa State went on to lose the game because they lost there from 88 to 2014. So yeah, that was a ding dong moment for me.
Oh, mine, the first one I can think of is probably using Meathead on a podcast.
That's pretty bad. Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's very ding dong. Maybe get into a car accident in Waco.
Well, we haven't talked about that
either. You might not
have
been in fault, but
I wasn't. Well, that just shows you should never go out and explore when you go travel to any of these cities.
Certainly not in Waco. Well, there's the least amount to explore probably of any Big 12 city.
One of the two or three things that we had talked about going into it was Magnolia Farms. It was the Branch Davidians. It was Dr. Pepper. It was campus. I did the campus thing, and then I was going out to the Branch Davidian site, and insanity ensued.
Got rear-ended. That's your fault for not going to check in on Chip and Joanna, frankly.
It really is. And then, you know, what is their other place called? Silos?
That's the place. Silos.
That's the place?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the restaurant attached to the store, I guess. I think.
Yeah, I know nothing, so.
All right, enough about ding-dongs. Our boy Adam Ring asked, with the possibility of a redshirt in play for Jaquan Bailey, how many games do you think we would have to miss to really consider using it versus playing just a handful of games at the end of the season? I think, again, we don't know the severity of the Bailey injury. Like, I'm going to do a little. I don't love to speculate on stuff, especially injuries, but if it's not a knee, it required surgery, and it's bone-related, that means he either broke his foot, his ankle, or his leg, right?
Right.
Presumably, like, if we're going to connect all these dots.
We are not doctors, but it's pretty safe.
Those are the three lower leg bones that I can think of, or extremities, is leg, ankle, knee, or excuse me, foot. We were told it was not knee related.
Not knee.
So, like, depending on which of those it potentially and theoretically are, what the severity was, what the injury was, or what the exact injury was, who knows when Jaquan Bailey can come back. The question for me with Bailey being a senior, albeit one with a redshirt season available, like what is his interest in coming back for another collegiate season where he would take the redshirt if, let's say, he is healthy by November 30th or December 6th or December 25th? There's probably a lot of moving pieces here. Not only like does he want to come back for another collegiate season when he had probably, you know, in his mind this was it for him, and I think once guys get there it's really hard for them to change their mind on that, but then also like if you are injured and you decide you're not coming back, you're going to go pursue a professional football career, which I think Bailey has a future in potentially, or at least the opportunity to. Do you risk further injury or a completely different injury after being on the shelf for however many weeks that he would potentially be in by the time he theoretically could be healthy to play?
Yeah,
which is a long way of saying I don't know, but I feel like there's a lot of moving parts here for Jaquan Bailey.
Absolutely. It's all about how quickly he recovers. I mean, so they're 5 games into the year. Say, say he even gets to November 16th, which is Texas at home. Is that worth coming back? I mean, it's going to depend on how Iowa State may be situated. Do they have a shot at the Big 12 title game? Can he come back and play then? And even that feels pretty quick because that's, a little more than a month out.
Yeah, so 6 weeks, like depending what injury, like we just don't know what the injury is. I mean, if it's a foot, like, I mean, all those, everything we said, my guess would be of those, like knee and leg are probably the most, I mean, I don't know. I shouldn't even speculate. I don't know.
Well, like, for a defensive end, you got to think that your knees and legs and your ankles, they all got to be sturdy if you're going to draw
like
power.
Like as a human being, are important pieces.
Yeah. So I don't know. The one potential draw, if he ended up not playing this year, decided to come back, his brother is a redshirt junior on the team right now. That's a factor maybe too. Again, it's so hard to say kind of as he goes through his rehab, what's all weighing on his mind. And it comes back to your point. There's just so many unknowns, but there are certainly pathways to both scenarios. It's just kind of, I think it's just going to be really touch and go as they kind of progress through the next, 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, hopefully we maybe hear from Bailey at some point and he can illuminate the situation if he so chooses. But until then, we're going to go to our man in Kansas's question. Ted Flint, was there a more impressive play call this Saturday than when the Jack Trice sound mixer hit play on Juicy Wiggle for the second time before we even knew Iowa State had recovered the fumble?
It's kind of like on a much smaller scale. It's like the confetti operator when, what was it,
Villanova Chris Jenkins hit the game winner, and yeah, the confetti went boom.
That was an all-time gutsy moment by a game operations person.
I'm always fascinated by not only game ops, but fans who are very attuned to game ops, because I feel like I never was really as a fan or a kid growing up, but some people will take it very seriously, as our friend Ted does, and I appreciate that, because like that's a it's an important job and part of the game day experience.
I know Juicy Wiggle's become a bigger thing, so people are maybe more in tune to that, but the timing of it and people's recognition is it's on point.
I had to look
it
up.
Did you really?
Yeah. It's the party rock guy, though, yeah, right? Uh-huh. LMFAO?
Yep.
But just one of them?
Just one of them, as far as I know.
I had to look it up.
Yeah, because they never get to any words in it. It's all just the beat and the intro.
But to Ted's larger point, turnovers. We're going to break turnovers down.
Do we have to bring it back to football?
I mean, no, but we're going to. We'll diverge soon enough. Have no fear.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was kind of a talking point earlier in the year is why can't Iowa State generate turnovers? And, I think part of it is being in the right position. I think that's obviously you got to, be where you're supposed to be. But, Matt Campbell said that there's maybe not as much luck involved. I think there's probably some sort of streak or flow or some sort of, I feel like there's got to be a little luck.
Of course there is. Like, you need the fumble to bounce the right way. You need the deflected pass to go to the right person. But like, that's to say, A, you'd rather be lucky than good. And B, sometimes luck is just making sure you're in the best position possible at all times to take advantage of random situations.
Which they were. I can't remember who was on the edge on the fumble by Duggan, but Orion Vance was coming pretty hard up the middle and was able to jar it loose. I think it was...
It was 11. Was that Lawrence White?
Lawrence White, yeah. So they were able to jar loose, and then Eni Iwazurike was able to pick it up. So that's, again, that's a being in the right position, being heads up. And then later on in the special teams, when Reger fumbled, when Peterson punched it out, and I think Rory Walling fell on it. I think it's about opportunity, but it's also about... you know, a little bit of the randomness of the game, but they're going to be playing a team on Saturday that just had a ton of turnovers. Austin Kendall threw four picks against Texas. You know, Matt Campbell was asked about that a little bit today, said, you know, it's a little bit like LaMichael Petway for Iowa State. He comes in a little bit late to the program, just kind of getting acclimated, transferring over from Oklahoma. You know, in Texas, you know, every team goes in and disguises coverages and does different things from maybe what they've shown on film. So I think there's a blueprint there to get a lot more of these, especially on Saturday. But again, it's part of being in the right position, but also just kind of having the ball bounce your way a few times.
Now, a 2-for-1 here is a continuation of Ted's question and one from Brian Golden. Ted asks, is Brock Purdy one bowl game win away from being the best Iowa State QB ever? Hashtag hyperbole. While Brian wants odds on Brock Purdy being a Heisman finalist in his time at Iowa State. Those are two large and lofty questions.
Yeah, the Heisman finalist, as good as Brock Purdy is, it's hard to ever see that. I know Baylor did it with RG3, but there's got to be something more transcendent, either about the team or about the player. You got to be able to be in big games to have those kinds of moments, whether that's in the non-conference. You know, having, say, the Iowa game this year would have been a top 15 matchup. He goes and throws a few touchdowns, they go and win that. You just got to be able to get your name a little bit more out there to, I think, have that kind of conversation around you. But to be in the best quarterback at Iowa State, if he gets a bowl win, you as a fan, you would hope that they would eventually get a bowl win these next couple years with him, just given kind of his skill set and how he's able to command the offense. But I think even if they weren't, I'd still think you'd have to put him in that conversation, just the numbers he's been able to put up. And I think the confidence that people have in him to go play the position effectively. So yeah, the bowl win would be nice, and it would maybe more solidify that, but I think people might think about him that way regardless.
Yeah, I probably don't, without really diving into it, I don't have the historical perspective probably to be able to answer the where he may or may not land in the hierarchy of Iowa State quarterbacks.
Well, and it's hard because the game changes so much too. So you got to.
Could it be that he's also literally just one season into his career? Like, he started his first game the first week of October a year ago.
Right.
So, like, we're probably getting a little ahead of ourselves here.
But, I mean, you even think about the quarterbacks that have had sustained success. They haven't, you know, I feel like he hasn't as many blips. And the first three quarters against Baylor was probably the biggest blip, or Texas last year was a blip. But I think he's been able to respond to things better than maybe some of his, whatever contemporaries in Iowa State quarterback history. So, yeah, obviously... you know, it's always good to pump the brakes every once in a while. He is a sophomore. There's a lot of things that have to go right, but I obviously he's impressive and he's had a good year so far.
Yeah, and then when it comes to the Heisman, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, because so much of that is perception, and I say that as a Heisman voter. The Heisman is strange. It's not strange. It is, I think, particularly sensitive to media coverage. Because there are so many Heisman voters, some of whom are qualified, some of whom are probably not qualified, and then some of whom, like, are you a Heisman voter?
Yeah, I am.
Like Dylan and I, who theoretically are qualified, but Dylan, how many football games did you watch on Saturday?
One, Iowa State and
TCU.
Yeah,
me too. So when you're covering a football team like Dylan and I do, you're at for an 11 o'clock kickoff, and we'll take Saturday out because of the weird rain delay. You know, we're there by 8 a.m. and we don't leave till 7 or 8 p.m. Like that's kind of our day on Saturday. It's hard to watch much football. So you're kind of highlight cruising. You're maybe doing DVR, but is that, I don't know how many games you watch on Sunday on your DVR on your day off.
Yeah, not many. And if I do, I kind of veer even toward the NFL. And I'll catch highlights here and there. But when you are on the beat for a college football team, you're in that. I mean, you don't see, you hear scores, you see scores on Twitter or whatever, but you don't get to see like any of these games.
So within that context, you need a breakout moment, the Heisman moment, quote unquote. You need to be on an elite team, your Alabama's, your Clemson's, your Ohio State's, your USC, whoever. And or you need to be an elite NFL prospect. It's that last one that I think maybe Purdy can break through in because the numbers flip and love him. Like the analytics love Brock Purdy. And I think more than maybe the eye test does, and I think the eye test does him a lot of favors, but if he's able to next year or potentially his senior year be mentioned, if he continues the success, I wouldn't shock me if that's the his way in the door, and maybe Iowa State continues to build on this thing that Campbell's got, and they're a preseason top 10 or top 15 one of these years. You know, they were top 25 this year. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. So I do think it is possible, but if you wanted me to give you odds, probably, let me do percentages because odds are confusing to this journalist who's bad at math. 15% chance that Brock Purdy's a Heisman finalist? Is that high? Low? Right on the mark? Right.
Yeah, I don't even know how to quantify it. I mean, there
yeah,
are...
I know, man. We're guessing here.
I know. It feels right, I guess. I mean, I wouldn't put it much higher than... you know, 20% for sure. So I think it's just it probably in the teens at this point. And again, there's so many things that go into it, whether it's having the visibility early in the season. He's got to have teammates that help him out. The defense has to be good. I mean, you just have to be on a good team. Like when Robert Griffin won it for Baylor, you know, 8 years ago or whatever, that was kind of an outlier because I think Baylor was 9-3 that year. So
yeah, and he was like completing like 85% of his passes and had more touchdowns and incompletions like within like the first 6 weeks or something like that. I remember like, so he had a story to tell that gets picked up. And again, for better or worse, probably worse, I do think that this award is particularly sensitive to perceptions.
Absolutely.
All right. Our last question comes from Tyler Jordan, who lays out a scenario for us. Iowa State invites Snoop Dogg, that's D-O-double-G, to Hilton Madness. What does Steve Prohm do when the pole dancers come out? Tyler, I'm not going to answer that question, but I do want everyone to take 5 to 10 seconds just to think about Steve Prohm's head exploding. Okay, well, there you got the visual. So again, I'm not going to answer that, but that what a freaking spectacle in Lawrence. Part of me loves it because it's so brazen, and as a founding member and captain of Team Trash Talk, it was absolutely brilliant. But like the other part of this is like there's dudes in jail because Kansas claimed it was a victim of Adidas and the shoe companies hijacking their program and allegedly, or I guess, I mean, people went to jail, so not allegedly, breaking the law. So that's a little icky. In terms of the stripper poles and the money gun and Snoop Dogg, Kansas is pearl clutching, and the oh my gosh, I can't believe it. We were expecting a radio edited, family friendly version of Snoop Dogg. Get the hell out of here with that. No one believes you, and you if that is even true, you should be ashamed of yourself. Have you ever listened to a Snoop Dogg radio edited song? It's not exactly something you're going to hear, in a kindergarten classroom or in a Sunday church service. Like, get out of here with that trash. Also, like, did they not have like warm-ups, like a dress rehearsal where there were dancer poles out on the floor at Allen Fieldhouse, like where somebody was like, that's strange. I wonder if we should talk about that. So just like Kansas, stop. You don't get to always play the victim when you're like, by the way, like let's talk about the intro video or the announcement video that Bill Self had where he's wearing the big Adidas shirt. Wearing gold chains. Like I believe Snoop is an Adidas celebrity, so I believe Adidas was highly involved with bringing Snoop Dogg to campus. So like, just own it. Either own it or don't do it. This victimhood, this mealy mouth, that is a major turnoff. Either be the trash talker, renegades, or be the pious blue blood. Like, don't try to do both simultaneously.
Yeah, when I saw the denouncing of everything that happened at Allen Fieldhouse the next day,
Snoop Dogg went on trial for murder. Like, yeah. What are we talking about here, guys? Like, this is not like come on.
Yeah, everything had been fine a couple hours ago when Jeff Long was posing with Snoop Dogg in the locker room with her pictures and stuff. But then all of a sudden, he's a different guy when he walks out on the court. No, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, like I have like I enjoy Snoop Dogg's music and entertainment, but like let's not pretend that this is family entertainment.
You understand who you're bringing in.
Also, shout out to Snoop Dogg for being an integral part of the Pitch Perfect 2 plot.
Didn't see it.
Oh, Dylan.
Seen the first one a few times, though.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg does a wholesome Christmas album in Pitch Perfect 2.
I have seen Snoop Dogg perform in Old School, though.
He did. And there was a green hat involved, I believe. No pole, but nudity.
There was.
Well, we've gone off the rails here.
Yeah, it really devolved.
You were worried that we would actually be talking about football earlier. I told you we would diverge soon enough.
Yeah.
Tyler's second half of his question was, on a serious note, will the NCAA actually punish Kansas? I have no idea. I mean, they're going to try, I think. Otherwise, they wouldn't have sent the notice of allegations. Whether they're successful in prosecuting, for lack of a better term, that case, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, and that's so far out still, too. Like, it's hard to picture, you know, what ends up with that. If something, obviously, were to come of it, that's a pretty foundation-shaking because it is a blue blood.
All right. I think this podcast has sufficiently gone off the rails to call it a day. He's Dylan Muntz. I'm Travis Hines. This has been the Cyclone Slant Podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. Rate, review, subscribe, and we will catch you next time.